WMRA News, I'm Bob Levicky. Police identified the man they shot to death after a hostage standoff in Luray. The General Assembly will meet in August to decide what to do with a huge budget surplus, but much of that money is already spoken for. And in our latest local StoryCorps conversation, two women remember their fight against the Atlantic Coast Pipeline. This is the WMRA Daily for Thursday, June 24. Police have identified the man they shot and killed after a hostage situation in Luray on Tuesday as Deshaun J. Hill, age 39. The Luray resident took two people hostage inside a convenience store after Hill refused commands to drop his weapon and then pointed it at police. They shot and killed him. Hill had been convicted of several offenses in the past, including felony malicious wounding in 2010. At least one state trooper who fired at Hill is on administrative leave, and police are investigating. Governor Ralph Northam is calling the General Assembly back for a special session on Monday, August 2nd. When they meet, lawmakers will decide how to spend more than $4.3 billion in federal coronavirus relief funding. Some ideas include investments in public health services, economic recovery programs, and upgrading public schools to improve air quality and safety. But much of that extra money is already spoken for. Virginia Public Radio's Jad Khalil has more.
Secretary of Finance Aubrey Lane peppered the House Appropriations Committee with encouraging news Wednesday.
Corporate income taxes have also held up well this year. Sales were up at the retailers almost 50%. June 15th, monies were strong.
There are a lot of numbers, but they point to a big sum.
What this all means is that we're going to have a significant surplus, going to be between $1.5 and $2 billion, and I expect it to be closer to the $2 billion.
A $2 billion surplus doesn't mean the General Assembly can spend all of that money. The law requires that close to half goes into the state's rainy day fund. There might be requirements for other deposits, too. A key question, though, is how the recovery will be felt across different economic sectors and regions. Since April last year, Northern Virginia's employment increased by 8.2%, but the labor market in the Richmond-Petersburg area rose by only 5.2%. COVID relief money will get divvied up in a special session that starts August 2nd. Whatever's left from the surplus will be allocated early next year. I'm Jad Khalil.
Virginia's unemployment rate fell to 4.5% last month. Governor Northam said that the new number is lower than a year ago and below the national average of 5.8%. The unemployment rate measures the number of workers in the labor force who don't have a job but are actively looking for work. The only states with lower unemployment than Virginia are Alabama and Georgia. On Wednesday, a federal appeals court dismissed Lieutenant Governor Justin Fairfax's libel lawsuit against CBS. The court found that Fairfax failed to prove the network acted with malice when it broadcast exclusive interviews in 2019 with two women who accused Fairfax of sexual assault. Fairfax alleges CBS failed to thoroughly investigate the women's claims and was motivated to air them for a national audience by the Me Too movement. Fairfax, who recently lost his bid for the Democratic nomination for governor, has maintained his innocence, asserting that both encounters were consensual. Virginia's Constitution will mark its 50th anniversary on July 1st. That replaced a document built on white supremacy. Ben Pavier with VPM reports.
In 1901, a group of 100 white men in Virginia set out to prevent black voters from casting ballots. The Constitution they wrote enshrined Jim Crow rules and required segregated schools. Hank Chambers teaches law at the University of Richmond.
There were a number of southern states in particular that did that and did it intentionally.
In 1968, Democratic Governor Mills Godwin set up a commission to replace it. Dick Howard coordinated the team's work.
It was an extraordinary group of people.
The all-male team included Lewis Powell, who later served on the Supreme Court, and Oliver Hill, an acclaimed civil rights lawyer. The Constitution they drafted banned discrimination based on race and religion and entitled all children the right to a quality education. Voters overwhelmingly approved it, something Howard says would be less likely now.
Today, I can just imagine the social media and the misinformation that would be going around.
The 1971 Constitution has been amended over 24 times. Howard worries U.S. democracy itself is now at risk. Further constitutional protections may be necessary to keep it going.
Ben Pavier reporting. Finally today, As part of our WMRA StoryCorps partnership, we're sharing a conversation between Sarah Francisco and Nancy Sorrells about the Atlantic Coast Pipeline. Sarah grew up on a farm south of Stanton and is now an attorney leading the Virginia office of the Southern Environmental Law Center. Nancy Sorrells is a historian and a former member of the Augusta County Board of Supervisors. They are both members of the Alliance for the Shenandoah Valley and worked together alongside many allies to oppose the Atlantic Coast Pipeline. Their conversation begins with Nancy highlighting a key decision in Augusta County that denied the establishment of a pipeline staging area.
Well, in January of 2018, Dominion said we're going to set up a pipe yard, an industrial workspace, to start building this pipe and putting it in the ground. And we had consecutive meetings at the Augusta County Board of Zoning Appeals, and we turned out hundreds of people in January, in February, and finally a decision was made in March. And Dominion was told for the first time in 4 years, they were told no. It was so important, and I think Dominion was taken aback. And after that, things started shifting. Talk about your big wins in court.
A really important win for us and a big turning point, I think, was winning that first court ruling in May of 2018. 5 days after oral argument in the Fourth Circuit Court of Appeals in Richmond, the court threw out one of the required permits for the pipeline. And it was incredibly moving for me. I mean, I went home to the farm that evening so that I could tell my parents about it in person, you know, and give them the news. And just the fact that justice was being done at long last was incredibly moving. And for me, my work in life is based on the belief that the courts are the ultimate backstop and the ultimate equalizer, and that at the end of the day, the facts and the law will prevail. And there was a long time in this fight before we were able to have that day in court. We ended up having many days in court, but there was a long time in this fight where it felt like that wouldn't be the case. And the facts and the law did carry the day, and that was proved to be true in the face of a project that often until that moment just looked invincible. But there were a lot of ups and downs. I mean, we weren't able to stop construction right away, even though the pipeline had lost a required permit. There was a brief halt in construction in the summer, and then permits were quickly reissued and construction started again. And it wasn't until we won another important court ruling in December of 2018 that construction was stopped. We won another case shortly after that that helped solidify and extend that halt in construction. And when I think back on it, you know, we didn't know at the time, back in December of 2018, we didn't know that construction would never resume.
Start again. Yep. And then, you know, then we were at the Supreme Court, which just is amazing to think about. We started from that dining room table and wound up in the Supreme Court, yeah. Not necessarily something we wanted to do, but something amazing. You want to talk about July 5th of 2020?
Sure. You know, we'd been at the Supreme Court in the winter, and then as we moved through 2020, we were in the middle of the awful coronavirus pandemic. I had continued to see my mother. I was at her house in Stanton. We were sitting down to a late lunch, and Greg Buport, my colleague Greg Buport, who led the SCLC legal team throughout this whole saga, called me with the news that Dominion and Duke had decided to cancel the pipeline. And I was overwhelmed with gratitude for our clients and for the whole community that just refused to back down, and gratitude for my colleagues. I mean, for attorneys who literally did jumping jacks to keep themselves awake while writing briefs all night and over the weekend. It was just overwhelming.
It was a small bit of light in the middle of a deadly pandemic. I mean, it was amazing. And, you know, it confirms what we knew, that the arc of history does move toward justice. It's kind of switched us on to now, you know, as the Alliance for the Shenandoah Valley, We know that we have a special place, and we know what we have to do to make sure it's here for the next generation.
When people come together around a sense of place and a sense of their community and take a stand and refuse to give up and are able to combine that with the effect of the law as that equalizer that I was talking about, I think it continues to inspire the folks who've been involved in this effort, but I hope to inspire others.
Right. I think it's changed the dynamics of projects like this, and we still have a fight with the Mountain Valley Pipeline to the south of us, hopefully. You know, we all need to get behind them, but we know that the power of the people with the law behind them can win.
Sarah Francisco and Nancy Sorrells discussing events that led to the cancellation of the Atlantic Coast Pipeline. You can hear a longer version of their conversation spanning the start and end of the project at WMRA.org. The Southern Environmental Law Center is a financial supporter of WMRA. For WMRA News, I'm Bob Levicky. Thanks for listening. Stay safely connected and enjoy your Thursday.